Welcome to Real Estate Investing for Women. On this show, you will learn how to create wealth through real estate the blissful way. That means with very little stress and very little time. We talk about strategies, mindset, heartset, money smarts, resources, and so much more to ensure you're able to create the success you most deeply desire. Now, here's your host, Monica Sawyer.
Today, I am so excited to welcome back to the show, Kathy Fetke.
Hello there, Kathy. Welcome back to the show. So nice to see you.
Thank you. It's so nice to be back.
I just love our conversations. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I really, really enjoyed that conversation too. So,
Me too. Yeah, I learned so much about you that I didn't know. It was fascinating.
It's fun, right? When you hang out with people and you get to know them, you respect them, but you don't talk necessarily. We don't talk about ourselves naturally.
Right.
Yeah. And so, so that was really lovely, but thank you. What I wanted to share with my audience today is kind of what your perspective is on what to expect in 2022. Does that sound like a fun topic?
Let's do that. I think it's on everybody's mind.
Exactly. Yeah. So take it away. What are you expecting?
Well, in 2020, I actually said I was expecting a black swan event. Can you believe that? But I didn't know exactly what I was predicting there. You know, 2022, we have a few factors in place that people just need to be aware of. One is that we have inflation, right? Mm-hmm. We are seeing lots of inflation. And for investors, people who own real estate, that can be a pretty big deal. You can really build some wealth. It's not necessarily wealth because it's just inflation, but at least you own assets that are inflating. And if you don't have assets, then what you have is higher prices, right?
Right.
So for people who own assets, inflation is basically going to increase your net worth. And those who don't are going to have to figure out how to get in the game. So there's, you know, a coin with two sides, right?
Absolutely.
We got to look at all the sides. What happens in an inflationary environment generally is the Federal Reserve will then want to slow that down. The Federal Reserve is a central bank, and it's their job to really to curb inflation. That's really one of their key metrics that they look at. And for a long time, the Federal Reserve, well, for the last few months, they were saying this inflation was transitory. Many of us were saying, well, we'll be checking in with that. Doesn't look like it's going to be transitory when you printed so much money. That's a whole lot of money circulating. And that generally is going to create inflation. So a lot of us were kind of questioning that. But here we are, and the Fed is now saying, yeah, it's probably here for a bit longer, which means they're going to raise rates to try to slow down the economy, to try to curb inflation. So I know this is a big mouthful. It's a lot that I'm saying, but bottom line, when the economy is really chugging along, like it's really just going strong, generally that means people are getting hired and there's jobs and there's a strong stock market and real estate prices are going up and people are making money, they're spending money, and all that is circulating, and the velocity of money is basically driving prices up. And then when you add to it the fact that we have so many job openings, and that's usually common in a robust economy, right? So lots of job openings, which means that employers have to pay more to attract good labor. And there just doesn't seem to be the labor out there. So that causes inflation. And then again, you add all the money supply that's out there and this issue with, you know, materials and all these issues that we're having trying to get the materials that we need. And because we can't get them, the costs are going up. There's so many factors that's driving inflation that it's forcing the Federal Reserve to raise rates, which historically has slowed things down in the past. Unfortunately, in the past, it slowed things down to a screeching halt many times.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. And often in an environment like this, it would cause a recession. Mm-hmm. So what we're paying attention to is, will the Fed get it right? Will they do it nice and slow that the economy can adjust to it? Or will it just take the air out of the balloon, so to speak? So I guess moving forward, we need to be really careful and cautious in 2022 about what we own, what we buy, what we sell. And it's not going to be a 2021 or a 2020 or a 2019. It's going to be more like 2018, where interest rates were going up. That it was back in 2018 that the Fed did start tightening and started to slow down the economy a little bit. It was chugging along pretty good back then too. And that really affected new home builders. They saw a slowdown. But the real estate market in general didn't slow down, but new homes were having a bit of a more difficult time until 2019 when that reversed. And I don't know if you remember, President Trump had a big fight with the Federal Reserve and said, you better stop raising rates. You know, stop it. Not on my watch. You're not going to have a recession while I'm president, is basically what he's saying. And the Fed listened and turned it around. And I'm not sure really how that all happened, but it happened. And then, of course, COVID came along. And then the Federal Reserve really did what's called accommodating, which is lowering interest rates and flooding, you know, the economy with capital. And of course, that worked and it got things going again. And now they got to put the brakes on. So bottom line, things could slow down a little bit, which is a good thing. It's prices can't go up at these double digit rates forever. So we do need to pay attention to the Fed and what the Fed does. With that said, we still have some really serious fundamentals in place, which is so many young people, these millennials who are reaching home buying age, and there's not enough supply for them. And many of these young people who are forming families and they really want to have that backyard, never want to be stuck in an apartment again in case there ever another COVID situation where you're stuck in your apartment and can't use the pool or the facilities. You know, people are like, I want my own yard, especially when they've got young kids and they're having kids. You know, they're the largest cohort of millennials is 29 years old. 31 is the typical home buying age. The massive, massive amount of people over the next 2-3 years that are just coming into home buying age. So the product is not there for them. So you're going to have sort of a tightening and a raising of interest rates while the demand is still there. So I don't see any kind of housing crash, but I think the intent is to slow down the dramatic increase of prices, which may or may not work because of the demand is still there.
So we have all these studies and historically, we kind of know what the markets do. We know how to affect the markets and how to change, you know, their specific tools that the government has used for a long time, right? With some success or not, right?
Yeah.
But it's kind of an unprecedented situation this time. First of all, we had COVID, so we had all this money that flooded the market, right? But also our expectations. So up until COVID, everybody was kind of moving into the more of the cities and people wanted to be closer together in condos, apartments, blah, blah, blah. And then COVID, now people are kind of going back out into the country. Not the country, but you know what I mean.
Oh, they are. Yeah, no, they're going all over. They're going to cities too.
That's right.
A massive, massive household formation right now.
Well, and it's because people are getting to choose. So, and I think, and I don't know if this is true all over the country, and Kathy, help me to understand, but in the Silicon Valley where I am, we can now work anywhere. So you can just move to where you can get a larger house. Even if you're paying the same amount, you're getting a larger house. It might be in a different city, right? Are you seeing that too, that people have so much more mobility so they can make choices that are better for them and their families?
Well, we're definitely seeing that, but we're also seeing a massive demand for homes in the Silicon Valley.
So yeah, that's so true, right?
Even when you read these articles, I just read an article today about the mass exodus out of California. I know real estate agents in the San Francisco Bay Area who cannot keep up with demand, still it's multiple true. Offer situations. So, you know, none of it really makes sense. I would say that there's people who are making life decisions that they maybe couldn't before. And that life decision might be, you know, I might just sell this house while I can get multiple offers and go live in Arizona or Boise, Idaho, or, you know, Texas or wherever they're going and live a very different lifestyle. You could sell your house in the San Francisco Bay Area and be mortgage free, you know, if you wanted to, or have a much bigger house for a much lower payment, have maybe better schools. So a lot of people are making life choices that they maybe couldn't make before. But what that does is open up a property for someone who now gets to buy it, even though it seems so much more expensive than it was just a few years ago, but maybe not. Maybe not with the interest rates. My daughter just bought a house that was probably $750,000 a few years ago. She paid $1,000,001. She's 29.
Wow.
She's 29. But you know what? That payment is the same as rent in Southern California. She's just outside of LA and half an hour from me. And she was able to take on such a huge purchase because the payment is not different than the rent, and the what was offered out there was just hideous. You know, she couldn't mm-hmm. find anything she wanted to rent, so she bought. So,
good,
you know,
for her.
I'm so proud of her. You know, she had listened to me years ago when she just graduated from college and got a job in Chico. And I knew that the home prices were still in the $250,000 range, $300,000
wow.
range. I was like, please, honey, just listen to your mama and don't buy a car. And please just go buy a house. She's like, Mom, I'm 24. I'm not buying a house. I said, please just talk to a mortgage broker. She did. She found out she could own a house in Chico for the same price as renting. Again, amazing, in California. Yeah. So she did it. And, you know, 3% down, had to put $11,000 down. You know, she had it, she'd saved it. And she made $100,000 on that.
Wow.
When she sold that house, she was able to then buy this $1 million house, which again is the same. It's just amazing to me that it's the same as rent. It's like, I think all in, she's at $5,500 a month. And that's wow. sadly what the rent is. But I think that's how it is in the Bay Area too,
yeah,
right?
It is. It is. Well, I just had the weirdest situation. I think I told you this last week. We had a bidding war for a rental that I was actually renting out. Mm-hmm. Where I listed it just a little bit low, which is what I always do. I like to be in the middle of the market, not the higher range. Provide a really good product for a little less, you know, it's just so people are really motivated to stay. We had a bidding war, went like yeah. over market. It was like, I mean, it didn't go over market. It went right about market, but it was like, wow. So yes, things are crazy, even as a landlord.
Yeah.
What? I've never seen that. Like I've been
what's
in the
happening?
Business yeah. 30 years, right? I've never seen that. So you're yeah. right. There's all sorts of interesting things going on. And I feel like it's hard to understand and predict. And I think that that's causing an awful lot of uncertainty with investors. Mm-hmm. Like there, yeah. is this the right time to do it? What would you say to an investor right now around us? I mean, I know you told your daughter to buy. So that actually speaks very highly about getting into the real estate market, right? If you have your family buying. But yeah.
I was worried for her, not that she was paying $1 million for a house that was $750,000 just a few months ago. I was worried she wasn't going to find a place to live. And they have a big dog that's part pit bull. He acts like he's a poodle. You know, he's like the sweetest little guy, but no one's going to rent to someone who, you know, it's very hard. Mm-hmm. You have a big dog and a little dog and a baby and another baby, you know, soon. And the fact of the matter is, well, I look at my daughter who's 29 and she represents what's happening. So I often look at her, I know it's anecdotal, but she's always kind of shown me what's going on. And mm-hmm. when she was trying to get into soccer on the soccer team and win, it was very difficult because she's the largest group of millennials, the 29-year-olds, most competition. She had a hard time getting into college. She did get into college, but she was competing against brilliance everywhere, the mm-hmm. largest group of educated people when, you know, now competing for houses. Like this group, watch the 29-year-olds, because they're kind of facing what we faced, or I faced as a baby boomer, you know, like competition. So it's a massive group of people who are the most educated ever, of any group ever. They have more education at their fingertips, more access to information and data. They have the highest, you know, again, college degree rate than, you know, our generation did. But they have more information than our government had when we were young.
Right.
It's incredible.
It's
so
amazing.
I look at her and honestly, my 29-year-old has no problem paying $5,000 a month for rent. Not even a problem at all. Mm-hmm. You know, these are dual income families. She works at home. She's got a tech job. She's focused on email marketing. It's kind of nothing really that unique or it's needed. And as more and more businesses go online, and more jobs are needed for that. And these kids know how to do it. They grew up with it. So she's doing great. And I look at her and say, how many of her are out there? There's a lot of them, right?
There's a lot of them. Yeah.
There's a lot. If you look at the fact that there's, you know, 5 million, 6 million homes that change hands every year, you know, we think that, you know, we're kind of looking at real estate that sells. It's 5 to 6 million. This group of millennials is what, like 80 million, you know? it's a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't need every single millennial to be a huge success, but there's a whole lot of them that are, and they're able to afford today's prices. And especially if they are the ones who say, I'm going to get out of these big expensive cities and go live wherever I want. Mm-hmm. You know, my daughter could, but I made sure she lived near me because I need to see those grandbabies.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. You're going to have them. We want to see them.
Yeah. So it's a hard thing for me too. At Real Wealth, I'm responsible. The things that I say influence, you know, our thousands of people. We have 60,000 members, and they do rely on me and my research to help them make decisions of what to do next. And we syndicate. We have funds that we, you know, we buy houses and we buy apartments, and I got to get it right. You know, I got to get it right. I can't get it wrong. So it's a lot of pressure. And for those of us who have been through something like 2008 or 2001, you know, or these times when the economy contracted, it's scary. It's like, oh, is that going to happen again? Are we going to be buying at the peak and stuck with properties we can't rent? But then I come back to in 2009, when there were foreclosures everywhere and people were losing their shirts. My mother, I wrote this in my book, Retire Rich with Rentals. My mother was renting. They sold their Bay Area house and my dad died. And so she just didn't want to be a homeowner and she was renting. And she was renting in Chico, California, where my daughter was going to school. And her landlord was a pastor. He was on a pastor's salary. I am imagining in Chico is not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Let's just say it's $50,000, $60,000. I don't know what a pastor makes in Chico, but again, I don't think it's a lot. But she was renting from a local pastor. This pastor was retired. When he was 30, he decided to start buying a house a year. And he bought 10 houses in the Chico area with his little pastor salary. And of course, when 2009 hit, it hit Chico too. And those houses lost value. But you know what didn't lose value? Rent, because all the people that lost their houses suddenly became renters. My mom was one of them. She didn't lose a house, but she was just choosing a simpler life that was renting. So here's this pastor as an example. And I wrote a bit about him in the book to show that example that during the worst housing recession since the Great Depression, that was the worst. And we lived through it. This guy was getting a raise. His rents were going up. So he didn't even care that the value of his asset had gone down maybe by 50%. He didn't care because you know what? The cash flow going in his pocket, his retirement money was going up. And that's all that mattered. So I'm looking at this guy going, okay, he owns 10 houses, probably free and clear. He's retired. He bought them when he was in his 30s and he's making $2,500 on each. He's okay.
And I really want to highlight this, Kathy, because this is a thing that people really worry about when they're looking at buying investment properties. I had a very similar experience in 2008 where I actually bought property at the top of the market. Wow, that was really brilliant. But so a lot of my...
So did I.
So a lot of our properties dropped in value, but you're right. The rents went up. They more than... When you buy real estate in the Silicon Valley, Northern California, you don't expect cash flow for the first at least 5 years. Sometimes right. You're going to carry negative because we're in appreciating markets. People don't tout this anymore. It's expensive, but that's kind of how I've always invested. So that's what I do. So I buy these properties and I've got negative cash flow when I buy them. Suddenly we have a disaster and all my property values go down, but suddenly all my rents are now cash flowing those properties.
Amazing.
Isn't it amazing? Right? So yeah. So it's the same sort of thing. Like, what are you looking at? And make decisions based on what your long-term goal is. For him and for me, it was a retirement plan. I had confidence that the markets would go back up and my properties would go back up to value, hopefully surpass, right? But at the very least, my rents were going up. So it's interesting. That was kind of another disaster time, kind of like this pandemic we just went through was another kind of disaster time. It's hard to predict what's going to happen there. And so from my perspective, I love, Kathy, what you do, because you're getting people into the get rich slow, tried and true path to building wealth in America, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, this is the thing that you do if you have a long-term vision. And a lot of people are like 20 years out, like, I can't think next week what I'm doing, right? So like, how do you think 20, 30 years out? But if you have enough foresight to just put a little bit aside and do that, real estate performs, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I don't invest in high-priced markets for long-term rental like you do because it took us down. I'm just telling you my story that we were about 10,000 negative cash flow during the downturn. And that's not sustainable, especially when the values have gone down too and you can't sell.
Yeah.
It's not for me. So what I decided worked better for me is going into markets where the chances of where the, just the values are lower anyway. So the risk feels lower to me. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm going to buy a house in Florida that's beautiful and maybe brand new and is $200,000, $225,000, that's a lot different than $500,000 or $1 million, right? So if it goes down a little bit, it's not a lot. And the rents are $1,500. It's just not impossible for someone to pay versus a $5,000 a month. That's harder. Mm-hmm. So I just felt that for me, I never wanted to go through a negative cash flow scenario again. So we just look for neutral or enough cash flow. Mm-hmm. And in markets where it's still so ridiculously affordable to me. And that's what we're seeing is in these markets like Florida and Texas and Arizona and Alabama and Ohio, that other people are saying, yeah, that's really cheap. I could make that my primary. And then I can go on these fancy vacations or go to what, you know, do things. And I'm in good schools and so forth. But my mortgage is $1,200, you know, or my rent. So to me, it just felt safer to have more diversification in different markets with cheaper properties, but nice, good quality. I don't like junk. A lot of people go into these other markets, and we did for a while, into certain markets, and I won't say which ones, but we'd buy old junky properties and they were difficult. They're expensive to maintain. Old, I don't do that anymore. I like to buy high quality, not older than 1980s. I mean, I try to get even newer than that and brand new if I can. So kind of like you, I don't mind buying retail in an area that to me is just undervalued.
Right.
Because the locals are like, oh my gosh, why are you paying retail? You know, a local real estate investor in Tampa might not want to pay $200,000 for a new brand new property. They're going to look for the older one. For me, that is so cheap. Can you even imagine a $200,000 property?
It doesn't exist.
It doesn't even exist in Chico anymore. You know, just a few years ago, maybe Reading. I don't know. But it's really, to me, there's enough people in the world who would look at this $200,000 property and think that's a good deal. Yeah. That's a good deal. And there's enough money flooding in from all these different places. So that's what we look for. Areas where even if there was a recession, to me, I would not be worried about owning a bunch of brand new or very new-ish renovated properties in the $200,000 to $300,000 range. I just don't see how that could go wrong.
Yeah. So in those markets too, are they, so let's say 2008, 2009, when the markets fall, when you've got these lower price, or they're lower price for us, right?
Yeah.
The kinds of pricing. Do you see big swings in those prices also as far as the home values, or is it more stable?
Well, I can just say, you know, this strategy that I did back in 2005, I had Robert Kiyosaki on The Real Wealth Show back in 2005. And that was one of the best things that ever happened to me, because he was explaining to me that, and I was a mortgage broker at the time, so I should have been able to see it, but I couldn't. And many millions of people could not see it. Mm-hmm. He saw it clear as could be that the loans that were, you know, being given out were going to go bad. People lied on those loans. And I knew that. I was in the industry. I saw it every day. And he knew when those were going to reset, and they were going to reset in 2007. And 2008, so he knew exactly when things were going to be a problem. So he was saying, you know, sell everything in the high priced markets where there was an abundance of these loans, because the only way anyone could afford California at the time was lying on their loan. So he's like, sell everything in California, because he knew how many bad loans were out and going to reset, and he said buy in Texas, because they were very strict on their lending laws. They didn't allow that because they had gone through the financial crisis of the 80s, the SNL crisis, and they'd already had their banking system go down. So they were like, no, we're not doing 100%. You know, like you could, back then you could have a no money down loan and get money back. Like you could get
I know. It was what? Yeah.
Yeah. That was not happening in Texas. So he just saw the lending environment being stronger there, and all the jobs, so many jobs going to Texas. And so it all made sense to me. There were jobs going to Texas, population growth, pretty strict lending laws for the most part, and affordability. So I was like, oh, this makes sense. So we went, I found a real estate agent back then, and she really seemed to understand what to buy. And Rich and I just bought, like, oh my gosh, 14 brand new homes that were retail. Mm-hmm. We got them slightly under, but we were paying between $120,000 and $150,000 for brand new homes that rented for about 10%. So basically like $1,200 to $1,500 a month, and it cash flowed. Wow. So it was just like, yeah, let's do that. And I could do as many as I wanted. It was so easy to get loans back then. And that just made sense to me. Now, when the market crashed just a few years later, those homes actually did not go down in value. They didn't go up, but they didn't go down, but the rents went up. Mm-hmm. Just like you said, the rents went up. Here we were in the middle of the greatest recession. And I was experiencing the same thing my mom's pastor had experienced, was rising rents. And unfortunately, I'd kept a couple of California properties that just took us down. Mm-hmm. So you got to be careful of the weak links in the, you know.
Yeah.
It was, you know what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
Chain or whatever. Right.
Exactly.
Because a couple of bad decisions sort of took the whole thing down. Mm-hmm. But the good decisions were what I did. I bought quality properties. And then since then, those properties in Texas have tripled in value. And, you know, it's like, it's incredible. Unfortunately, I sold them before that happened. Oops.
Don't sell real estate. Don't
sell it. I know sell that. But shoot. That so someone else benefited tremendously. I was like, man, maybe people are right. Nothing ever happens in Texas. So we sold them and then bam.
That's funny.
They were cash flowing. So like you said, there's not a reason to sell them. So dumb. Anyway.
Even the very best of us make weird decisions. I'm just saying.
Right? Live and learn. That's why I'm here today, to share all the stories that will help you not make those mistakes.
Yeah. But I think it's true. So I really wanted a little bit more of that, sort of that deeper information, because I have seen this, right? Like I talked to somebody else who is investing in Alabama, and he was saying that, you know, you just don't see, you don't see the appreciation. Like in Texas, at least you're seeing the appreciation too. That's just an interesting market, yeah. Right? But in Alabama, they don't see the appreciation. They do see the rents going up. They see a little bit of appreciation. It's not staying.
It's happening now. Yeah.
It's happening, right? But when the market goes down, it doesn't have these huge dips that you get, for instance, in Northern California or LA or something like that, right?
No, because it's still so affordable. And that was part of our game plan, is to only buy things that the average person in that area could afford. And that left a very large group of people that, you know, if things did turn, they would still be able to afford it. I didn't want to go too cheap and I didn't want to go too high end. So it was just right there in the where the average person could afford. And that's pretty easy to figure out. You can go online, and citydata.com is a great place to get data. You can just find out what the average income is of the area, and that'll kind of tell you what the average home price should be. It really shouldn't be more than 2 to 3 times the average salary. And that's just certainly not the case in California. But, you know, again, in California, if you buy right, you're going to do well. That's the bottom line. So you have to have the stomach for that. You know, you're going to make the most money in California. There's no question. I mean, you know, I think the first property I bought in California, our first home, went up $100,000 every year for 10 years.
Wow.
You don't get that in other places, right?
That's right. Yeah. But again, it depends on your strategy. Mm-hmm. You know, like now I'm thinking about, what is cash flow going to look like for me? And we don't do that in California. That cash flow thing doesn't happen here.
Right.
You're going to figure that whole thing out. So the other thing I wanted to ask you, Kathy, I've never asked anybody this online. On
air. Oh boy, I'll be your first.
Because I know you're going to like... I always recommend the easiest real estate to get into is your primary residence, because there's a lower down payment. You have to pay rent anyways. Why not pay it to yourself? Right. So I always say rent, get your primary residence first. Then you can use the equity from that either to buy something else, or you can start to save for something else. But at least you're not making another landlord rich. You get the benefits of it, and for very little down often. Right. Do you agree with that?
Oh, 100%. I know. Kiyosaki says your home is not an asset. And I will say that's one area where I differ from him. I'll say for our home, the one you're looking at, we have a guest house on it. And we Airbnb it, and it pays for the entire thing. The money we get from that rental pays our entire mortgage and landscaping. So I think your primary these days can definitely be an asset. In fact, I've got friends who are going to come stay with us because they just rented their house out in Airbnb, and they're like, yeah, you just use our guest room. When it's our turn, we'll use yours. So people are using their primary now to make money. And I'm close enough to LA that I'll rent my kitchen out for cooking shows and stuff. And, you know, like, hey, whatever. I love making money, so I'll do it anyway I can. But 100%. There is no excuse. And I'm going to say this right into the camera so you're listening. There's no excuse for not owning real estate. There is no excuse because you can buy something with 3% down and maybe even less. And if you're a veteran, if you're in the military, you better own real estate. That's all I can say, because the opportunity for you to get low interest rates on veterans loans, come on, you can do it. You can do it. So, and then the FHA loans where you can, or even conventional loans, you can get a fourplex again for just 3% down. So you can live in one unit and rent out the other three units and probably live there for free or even cash flow, get paid to live there. So you might have to sacrifice a little bit. You might have to live somewhere where you don't want to live forever. And that's okay because you don't have to live there forever. That's the important thing that I think a lot of people don't understand. And my daughter, even with this house, this million dollar fixer that she bought, it's like, honey, this is not your forever house. You know, this is your inn. I know that sounds crazy. That was the cheapest house in the neighborhood, but in a nice neighborhood with the best schools. So, you know, it does not have to be your forever house, even if you're buying it as a primary residence with a primary loan. It's a loan as your home, your primary home. There's nothing in that documentation that says you have to live there forever. Well, you can get that 3% down primary residence loan and rent it out in 2 years,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing is that, I mean, just think about sort of the way Americans are. We move every 4 to 5 years anyways. No matter how much you love that first home, you'll find something you like better. Even if you think it's your dream home, right?
Yeah.
That first home that you get into it does not need to be perfect. And so many people, I think this is the mistake that we make, is that it has to be the perfect home or I don't want to move into it. Well, would you do that with a rental? It has to be the perfect rental or I'm not going to move in. No, you wouldn't do that. And you're paying somebody else to own that home. So instead, do that for yourself, right? Because it doesn't need to be perfect. It just needs to be good enough that you'll enjoy it for the period of time that you choose to live there. You're not marrying this house.
It has to, in my opinion, the deciding factor would be, if I found something better, could I rent this out and would it cover my payment? And in the case of my daughter, like I said, her payment's $5,500 a month. There's nothing in the area for less than that. So if she just, that's what I said, like it may be not perfect for you, but it's good enough. And if you find something better, you can rent this out. Mm-hmm. But what I found, when you're busy and you're raising children, 10 years can go by real fast, real fast. When they first came down to be near me, when they found out they were pregnant and needed mom around to help, I said, you know, you're going to be shocked at how fast this, get a 2-year rental because you're not going to believe how fast 2 years goes. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, it was like, oh my gosh, you know, the lease is up and there was nothing for them to rent. Mm-hmm. So if you want just the security of knowing that no one can kick you out, and that your mortgage is going to stay the same for as long as you're there.
Yes. The mortgage is going to stay the same. No landlord is going to raise your rent.
Yep.
Nobody is going to sell the house from underneath you. It's yours.
It's yours and you can fix it up and everything you do to it is improving it, increasing value. And I guarantee, I can almost say, even though legally I shouldn't, but I can almost say, I guarantee if you stay there for 10 years, it's going to be worth more. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not, you've spent 10 years paying down that mortgage and
you've paid in equity.
You've paid towards it. So yeah, 100%. If you know, get your first. Now, if you live in San Jose, California, you might not be able to do it. I understand that. So maybe you're just going to have to move to Milpitas. You know what I'm saying? Like you're not going to maybe, but Milpitas might be too expensive. Maybe you're going to have to move to Stockton. I don't know. But whatever, you know, whatever it is, if you can't do it in the Bay Area, I understand that's pretty hard to get anything there, but it might just be for a period of time you live somewhere else.
Right. I absolutely agree. And there's this whole thing about primary residence is not your asset. And you made some really, really good points that you did Airbnb and you rent out your kitchen and you like all of that stuff. My husband always says, well, does that mean that my stock portfolio is not an asset? Does that mean that, you know, whatever this or whatever that, my savings account, you know, at making 0.02%, that's not an asset. The thing is that all of those things are a part of your net worth. And so it's also depending on how are you accounting as an asset. Just because it's not making you money that you're writing off against or whatever, does not mean that it's not an asset. The big thing to just remember is that you're, instead of making somebody else rich, you're putting money towards your own future. And there's a lot of cool things that you can do with it, right? It's your own. It'll never be sold from underneath you. All of these things that we talked about. And you can rent out a room if you need to. When I first bought my very first place, we couldn't afford it. We rented out a room so that we could. When we lived in Mountain View, I rented out one room, Airbnb, and it paid for the mortgage and like so much of our lifestyle because we were right next to Google. So we were making a huge amount of money on one room, right? So there's there's interesting things that you can do.
Oh, absolutely. I've rented out my driveway. But like I said, I'm near LA and we have a big driveway. And so that's kind of rare. And they wanted to do a car commercial. So I'm like, cool. I've had people want to rent our backyard for weddings. And I mean, just for the ceremony, because I didn't want drunk people in my yard.
Exactly. And each market that you're in is going to have different things. Just kind of keep your ears and eyes open, right?
Yeah.
So she lives in LA, so she has access to all these different things. I live in the Silicon Valley, so I have different things that people are asking for.
Right? Yeah.
But every place has its own little things. Each community has its things, and you can take advantage of those things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, here's what I would want to leave with your audience is that we are in an inflationary environment. Now, the Fed is going to try to slow that down, and it will probably slow it down a little, but they're in a very difficult situation where they really can't raise rates very, very high because of the enormous amount of debt that would be impossible for the government to pay. So it's really a difficult situation for the Fed to try to slow down this inflation. But what we know for sure in the housing world, in the US housing market, is that there's not enough new supply for the amount of demand that these millennials are creating. Mm-hmm. It's a huge, huge group of people that are now home buying age. Add to it that you've got more and more people buying investment properties, having second homes, Airbnbs, people living longer, staying in their homes. The supply continues to diminish. So we've got, at the same time that we've got massive demand and low interest rates, we don't have the supply. So this is going to be a problem moving forward for a while. And this is why across the US, you are just seeing the same problem. Huge demand, not enough supply. So if you're looking to protect yourself against this massive inflation, it's really important that you acquire real estate. It really is. I can't say that enough. Like, you're going to get left behind. It's only going to get more expensive. And that's going to, if you're waiting for that foreclosure crisis, you might be waiting for a while because there's just simply not enough supply. And if somebody can't make their mortgage, they're going to put it on the market. They're not going to sit around and wait for the bank to take it from them. They're going to put it on the market and get their equity and sell it, and it will sell quickly. Mm-hmm. So this, you know, foreclosures are, it's not looking like that's going to be an issue for any time soon. Mm-hmm. So if you can save your money and, you know, find parts of the US where there's high demand, like Austin, you know, Dallas, Tampa, Jacksonville, the Southeast is the fastest growing part of the US, and homes are still cheap there, yet it's attractive and there's job growth. You can still buy properties for $200,000 or less. If you want a really fancy property, you pay $300,000. Can you believe that? And I mean, I really fancy.
So I can't believe it.
Yeah. And in a really A-class neighborhood. So, you know, what are the chances that you're going to lose money on that? You know, it's really slim. You're going to be all in around $1,200, you know? So anyway, there's incredible opportunity, and a $200,000 house. Okay. That's a $40,000 down payment. You do need to save your money and have, but if you don't want to wait, then buy your primary. Because again, that's only 3% down.
Yeah. I love that. So Kathy, you've been on the show a few times and you've talked about the Real Wealth Network. So I want to make sure that I highlight that to my ladies. Kathy knows what she's talking about because she helps you to buy properties all over the country, or her team does. We've met Leah before on the show, and she's our own exclusive ladies real estate investing for women coach with Real Wealth Network.
Yeah.
And so if you want to find out more about what Kathy is talking about in these different markets, you can definitely go to their website. And so the URL to remember is blissfulinvestor.com/real wealth. So blissfulinvestor.com/real wealth. That goes directly to a page where you can sign up for a consultation. It's free with Leah. And it will also guide you to the link to go see Kathy's amazing website, where they have so much education and all of that amazing stuff. So Ladies, I just want to let you know, Kathy's amazing. Her team is amazing. And you need to connect with them. So go to blissfulinvestor.com/real wealth.
Thank you so much for saying that. We have really solid relationships with builders and property managers nationwide. We've known for 10 years and they just really take care of our people. They become close friends and they don't want to let us down. And I mean that sincerely. There were times when we, in the early days of Real Wealth, where I didn't, that sometimes, you know, they weren't the highest quality, but we've learned through the years, these relationships are solid and they set aside properties for us. So you don't have to do the bidding wars. You don't have to fight for this stuff. They don't raise the prices just because 10 people want it. You just go on the wait list, you know? So it's a really nice relationship where it means a lot of them are in business. They don't have to be, they could be retired, but they want to keep helping our members. So it's just, we have a tremendous amount of trust and faith in these people.
Yeah. And it's lovely that because you have been in those markets for a long time and you have these relationships, you have relationship leverage too. So when things go wrong, you know, because it's a part of a community, they really want to make things right, right? Not that they wouldn't anyways. I mean, but.
No, they wouldn't anyway. I'm not these people. I mean, these people would, but
yeah,
but there's a lot who won't, you know, if you're, if you're just one investor in who's got a property manager that's taking care of you, but that got 5,000 other properties, you're really,
you're low on the list.
You don't have a strong voice, but with us, they really don't want to let us down. Yeah. Cause we've had this longstanding relationship and we have thousands of people that they take care of. So they wouldn't want to lose that business.
Right. Perfect.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So I loved our conversation today, Kathy. Thank you.
Thank you. It's always fun to talk to you.
Did you want to do our three rapid fire questions now?
Let's do it.
Okay. So Kathy, tell us one super tip on getting started investing in real estate.
I usually tell people that I know this sounds really basic, but just talk to a mortgage broker. You know, we've got three or four on our website that work specifically with investors. And that's important. You don't want to just go to your local B of A. You need to go to a mortgage broker who specializes in working with investors and find out what you can buy. Because you might be shocked. You know, you might be shocked to see that you can qualify for more than you thought. And that's important for your audience because they're used to having to qualify for $1 million property. And then all of a sudden they find out, oh, this is like qualifying for a car. You know,
yeah.
it's shocking. So I would say, talk to a mortgage broker and see what you can do. And if you're not in a position to buy yet, they'll tell you why, and they'll give you reasons, you know, what to work towards. So that to me is one of the first things. And of course, educating.
Yes.
Which learning, they can
do
learning,
on your site. Yep. Love that. Okay. And then what is one strategy on being successful in real estate investing?
I mean, I probably just said it, but you know, the more you learn, the better. You know, I just interviewed the cutest NFL guy on my show, Devon Kennard. He's with Arizona. And he, oh, he was just darling. We got to listen to that when it comes out. But what he, you know, he just, when he's training in sport, you know, when he's training for the whatever, for football, he's listening to podcasts, you know, he's just constantly learning. So there's so much free information out there.
Yeah, exactly. And then what would you say is one daily practice that you do, Kathy, that contributes to your personal success?
Daily practice, exercise. I have to. I carry a lot of stress, I guess, from what I do. Mm-hmm. And if I don't exercise, then I, you know, it just gets in my body. So it gets out when I go work out.
Awesome.
Especially in nature, especially if I can go paddleboarding or hiking or something like that.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you. This has been amazing. Thanks for all that you offered in this show. That was amazing information.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah. It's always nice to hang out.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you'd like to find out more about how to become a blissful millionaire, go to blissfulinvestor.com. See you next time.